It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco and Renee Ritchie will join me. We've got lots to talk about. We'll spend some time talking about the iPhone X, how to get ready for ordering it, some of the features. High Sierra is out, and even the first supplemental fix. We'll talk about the problems and the fixes. And, of course, iOS 11.1 and the new emojis. There's lots to talk about next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 579, recorded Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. Schadenjunken. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Jamf Now, Apple management software for Mac, iPad, and iPhone devices. Visit Jamf, jamf.com/MacBreak, to create your free Jamf Now account and manage your first three devices free. And by IT Pro TV. A good IT pro is always learning, and IT Pro TV is the resource to keep you and your IT team's skills up to date. Visit itpro.tv/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off your monthly membership for the lifetime of your active account. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software loved by over 10 million people. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together and talk about Apple obsessively without end. Renee Ritchie's here, thank goodness, from imore.com. Hey, a little bit of a snow on the roof there, and is your beard getting whiter? What's going on here?
No, it's just I've let it grow a little bit, and it's punishing me by being incredibly bright.
Look at that. You're going to look like Kenny Rogers in a minute.
Gotta know when to hold them.
Know when to fold them. Also, Andy Iannocco here in this copyright violation episode of Mac Break Weekly from the Chicago Sun-Times. Find him online at CWOB.com. Hello, Andrew.
You just gave me an idea to hold the show hostage. If you don't PayPal $500 into my account in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to start singing Beatles and Rolling Stones songs that are impossible to clear.
Iannocco Buster. It's an Iannocco Buster. So, October 27th is now 17 days away as we record this. That is the day, of course, we will be able to order the iPhone X. Apple has received FCC approval.
Thank goodness. That would have been so embarrassing.
Wouldn't it have been embarrassing? Yeah. Actually, if I guess they don't apply ahead of time because that would be, we'd know all about it. It did, in fact, say on the iPhone X product pages, iPhone X has not been authorized as required by the rules of the FCC. This device may not be offered for sale or lease or sold or leased until authorization has been obtained.
Did Jobs say that? He wanted Apple to announce the iPhone and not the FCC?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Takes them a while. So pre-orders are on, although if you listen to the rumors from people like who should know, like Ming-Chi Kuo, it sounds like it might be very, very difficult to get an iPhone X.
You'll get one. It's just no accounting for when, Leo.
November 3rd might be.
It's when you'll get
it. Yeah. iPhone 8 is, of course, Apple's answer to that. You can buy a brand new iPhone right now. Get the iPhone 8. Kuo says the iPhone 8 is, in fact, selling better than expected. But he says the true super cycle, that's when, the Apple's results go through the roof. The true super cycle for the iPhone won't actually happen until next year because you won't really get enough production of the iPhone 10 until then. Furthermore, he says in 2018, the phones will see longer sales period than the 2017 iPhone 10 due to the improvements in availability as Apple perfects the production process. In other words, while there may be some iPhone 10s available November 3rd, they're not going to fill that pipeline. He is predicting 210 million to 220 million iPhone sales in 2017, and then next year, a big bump, 245 to 255. What is your strategy going to be, Renee Ritchie, for getting? Because you need
this.
You need it especially. I need it. The three of us really want to have an iPhone 10 in time, you know, to tell people whether to get it or not as soon as possible.
Totally. Yeah. So, I mean, my usual modus operandi is to wake up at 3 a.m. local time, which is 12 p.m. your time, and then hit the Apple Store app on the iPhone as hard as I possibly can and just try to get my order through. Hope the servers stay up. Hope the Apple Pay is working. Hope Apple Pay is much faster than the other payment processing methods. So I make sure I have that done. I go in beforehand, make sure all my account details, my address, everything is proper. I try to buy something small the day before just to make sure that everything works. And I'm paranoid, but they are out to get me. So I don't feel bad about doing that.
Well, you probably get a watch band. Like I got the Hickenlooper.
Oh, Hickenlooper's nice. Yeah, those are good.
This is the Velcro. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Hook and loop.
It was made by Velcro, but they call it hook and loop.
It actually is Velcro.
Yeah, I think Gruber was talking about that. It's a partnership with Velcro, the same way the glass is made by Corning, but it's not branded.
They don't say that it's Gorilla that Glass, even though it is. This is for a sport band, my favorite new sport band.
The idea is that it would never look scruffy, no matter how often you pull and.
Oh, really?
Pull up and pull down on it. Yeah.
We shall see.
Scruffiness is to be averted.
Yeah. I also got to match the gray, I got a black Milanese loop.
I'm wearing that today, Leo. I love it with the gray watch.
Isn't that pretty?
It just looks so great.
I'm a little worried, though, because my silver Milanese got scratched up pretty quick. So we'll see.
It did. I think the DLC coating is just so tough.
Oh, good. I hope so.
Yeah.
So we shall see. Andy, do you have are you going to try to get an iPhone 10 or are you just going to wait and see if you get a review unit?
I'm going to try to get an iPhone 10. I'm not day one reviewer. I like to ponder a little bit, but I know that there might be a lot of time for pondering, as in pondering when I'm going to get one. I'm going to be like Renee. I'm going to be awake at 3 a.m. Central Time.
We can all tweet each other then.
Yes.
at the same time, you know, you can't like make requests of Apple, but you can say, obviously, I'm going to be quite interested in reviewing the iPhone 10, and I know it's going to be a short supply. And that's when you say that. Well, I hope to do it my first radio show on National Public Radio in Boston as soon as after the release, to sort of, again, if there's like a row of checkboxes, I know that if there's a 10 out of 10, I know that at most I'm going to get 3 out of or 4 out of those checkboxes, but I want all 4 of those checkboxes, whatever metric they're using. I mean, I'll even turn my hat backwards and do one of those like direct to camera unboxing videos that get all the hits. If that's what requires to make sure I get one.
There's a guy named Robin, blanking on his last name, but he's the guy who uses the iPad Pro to do the storyboards for things like Designated Survivor and Star Trek Discovery and Pacific Rim. He does it all on iPad Pro. He's phenomenal. And the other day he tweeted, "What is up, guys? I keep watching YouTube videos and I just don't know the answer
What's
to that
up, guys?
Question.
What's up, guys? What's up, guys? What's up, guys?
They keep asking, but is there an answer?
Oh, I hate that. So what colors are we looking at here? You get silver or black. That's it, right?
The silver is incredibly silver. It is like original iPhone, so bright you can't believe it's bright silver. It's just shockingly bright silver. The black is very muted. The black stainless steel is actually, I don't know if it's DLC coated the same way as a watch. They call it vapor coating, and DLC is a type of vapor coating. So I'll leave that to the material science experts. But it's got a very similar coating to what's on the Apple Watch and a much darker palette. So if you want something that really screams bright, shiny, then the white one is for you. If you want something that looks like Batman's phone, then you want the iPhone 10.
And speaking of screaming, Apple does two things to this phone, I think, I would submit almost unnecessarily, to make sure that everyone will know that you have the new iPhone. Of course, the notch is one. And then they've repositioned the camera lenses so that they're now oriented vertically instead of horizontally. So it'll be very clear.
My understanding is how it fit. Yeah. So like because of the way the insides are rejiggered, they couldn't fit it horizontally the way they did on the other one. So it was a better fit for the components this way.
Well, but it's also it's a beneficial thing too, because it is important. I think at least half the people who buy iPhones, maybe more, buy them because it's a status symbol. You want to have the latest iPhone, and that's what drives a lot of first day traffic anyway.
Super cycles, Leo. It drives super cycles.
It drives super cycles.
I think that the iPhone 10 especially because it's right now it seems as though you're going to get the same processing power. I'm not expecting the camera to be that much better. It's going to be you're going to get a better case. You're going to get a better form factor. You're going to get 3D Face ID. But there are not a whole lot of people that are complaining about Touch ID right now. So, yeah, I mean, that there's again nothing to be ashamed of. But the first think piece I see that says that the new iPhone 10 is very much the culmination of everything that the industry has been building towards for, like, okay, yeah, it's a nice phone, it's a lovely phone, it's a pretty phone. It's okay to spend extra money for nice, lovely, and pretty things, but don't say that. Until the tests come back, don't say that it's something that's...
What color are you going to go for?
I think it's the opposite. Isn't it the opposite, though, Leo? It's like it's not the iPhone 8 feels like the culmination of what Apple's done till now, and iPhone 10 feels like what they're going to start doing from this point
forward. They're aiming to.
Yeah, where they're going next. So like it's a Rev A board, and some people just avoid Rev A boards. They want to stick with like the they'd much rather have the culmination product and let us test the new one, and then they'll get iPhone 10.2 or whatever that is. I think Andy's absolutely right. It's going to be it's something different.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the thing that would be most signifying of, hey, this is a new revolution, is if they really did say, well, we're going to be putting the new neural net engines only in the iPhone 10. The iPhone 8 is going to have to wait for a while for that to scale down a little bit. But I think the one thing they absolutely did not want to compromise on were, let's make sure that all the technology we have in here that requires machine learning can actually do that very, very ably. Everything that's going to require AR has to do that very, very ably. And they would never compromise on camera technology, I believe that, again, speaking with the authority of someone who has not even touched an iPhone 10, I believe that the only things that are going to enhance the camera on the iPhone 10 are going to be things that they can get for free by actually having a real 3D face camera up on the front. So I think that, like I said, I'm not trying to snark on people. It's perfectly, you don't need to explain that I can afford the extra money for the iPhone 10. I like the iPhone 10. This is a thing I'm going to be taking out of my pocket 10 to 40 times a day. I would like to I like to have lovely things. That's why I'm spending extra money for it. But
the only difference on the back is the f/2.4 and OIS on the telephoto.
OIS on both lenses. Yeah.
That does make a difference. That's an important thing.
Yeah, but even here, so much of the real magic in camera improvements is going into computational photography as opposed to making the actual hardware better.
Yeah, it's interesting that, for instance, Google now in this new they dropped the other shoe. We heard Google's announcement on the Pixel 2 this week, and they announced that they didn't need two lenses. That they could do it with a single lens. And
they didn't need
OIS
last year. They don't need two cameras this year.
They don't need two lenses, but they did use left-right pixels in order to get things like depth.
I thought that was really interesting. Yeah, they're doing paired pixels on the sensor.
Yeah, and yeah. I can't wait to get my hands on it, see how well it works. One of the things is that they have one of the people who's leading up their computational photography team is this really, really smart cookie from Stanford. They hired away from Stanford, who used to be like one of the guys you would want to talk to about computational photography. One of my picks of the week, like years and years ago, was I forget what it was called, but it actually let you do sort of depth of field effects by shooting through the camera and basically focus stacking. And that was basically a research project he released out of Stanford must have been 10 years ago, nearly by then. And he retired from teaching. I think he's doing one class. He got pulled back for a semester this year, but they've got some pretty cool stuff on there. And also the things that when they talked about the Google Clip camera, just to talk about computational photography, here is a camera that you just basically set it up. It will wait for what looks to be a good picture happening in front of the camera, and then it will take that picture. If only 800 people buy this camera, it will have done a certain job by saying, here is where we think photography is going, not necessarily hooking up a bigger sensor or a bigger lens, but putting better smarts inside that camera so that you never actually see how bad a picture the image sensor is actually taking. It's going to cook it and it's going to process it so that by the time it hits your screen, it looks beautiful.
And I miss all the Bigfoot pictures that way. Just all the crummy Bigfoot pictures that camera never took.
So are you going to – I just did this. I favorited the iPhone yes. 10 model I'm going to get.
Yeah. Yes.
Silver 256. Silver, nice. I think. What do you think?
Yeah.
You sold me on silver.
I'm probably going to get the space gray just because it'll match the watch that I'm currently rocking. And I'm just that watches. Superficial. I'm just that superficial.
I wish you could like buy iPhones the way that you can buy theater seats, in which there's a button. You could say, do I want to be in the balcony? Do I want to be in the orchestra? Do I want to be like in a, you can just say just best available. Yes. Just say whatever whatever color is available, whatever memory amount is available. I just want to own one. I just need to own one of these. Sell me the pink 16 gigabyte one with a cracked screen that no one else is touching.
Nearest neighbor search. I want this, but give me the closest thing to it you have.
Yeah. It's a safe bet. Even on phones, you can return them within 14 days. So
yep.
If you really are that concerned about Series A motherboards, just keep it in the box. A week later, if people are not getting their eyes blinded by the what turns out to be an actual laser dot in the Face ID, then unbox it, take a look at it.
Oh, that's going to be a headline now, Andy. People laser to death by
exactly. That's why you should not buy, and I do not pre-order an iPhone 10. I'm telling you, you'll regret it if you were sitting online there.
Just don't do it, especially in the Boston.
$1,150, but that's all right. It's just money, right?
My Pixel wasn't. I mean, I bought a Pixel XL last week, and it
Same
was not
thing.
Cheap.
No, and actually, I think I'll get the iPhone. Well, I'm being optimistic. If I get the iPhone 10 on November 3rd, I'll get it before I get my Pixel.
Is it Pixel XL or Pixel 40? I can't tell with Roman numerals anymore. What are we supposed to say?
Oh, interesting. Good point. I didn't even think so of confusing. That. It's 40. I'm going to get the 40, a 40. Pixel 240. So you saw him, Renee. So
yes.
Is the new iPhone 10 smaller than the 8? I think it is.
It's a little differently shaped. Like, it's a little bit longer than a regular iPhone 8, but not much. I think it's just a tad thinner and a little bit longer, but I didn't have them at the same time, so that's just my faulty recollection at work.
Yeah.
It's way smaller than a Plus, though.
It's a bigger screen because it's a 5.7-inch screen instead of a 5.5, but, of course, the bezels are infinitesimal. So
they deleted all the bezel, all the bezel.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Now, one of the rumors also, I think, from Ming-Chi Kuo is that the next iPad will have Face ID built in as well, that they're going to extend this technology to the iPad. Will it have the notch?
You know, that's super interesting. They went out of their way to make a notch. Like, it would have been easier not to make a notch, just to make that part of the bezel run all the way across
what
other
Samsung
manufacturers
does
do.
With the Note 8. They just
And it takes silicon to support that. It takes the panel to support that. It takes the UI to support that.
Yeah, well, you can't just buy a panel from Samsung and cut a chunk out of it.
No.
You have to have it made that way, right?
You got to fill that chunk with pixels. Like, you got to have the display drivers and everything. And, you know, you got to do the curves. It's non-trivial. I mean, so that they might want that to be their next big identifier.
So this is a Note 8. And actually, even a bigger screen, it's 6.3-inch screen or something like that. But what they just did is they have a bezel that's big enough to hold the camera and stuff. And that Apple could have done that.
Totally.
I feel like they did the notch so it would be visually distinctive as much as anything else.
A lot of people already have them. And like we've seen this right after the event, they're allowed to open carry. So a lot of people at Apple are out there testing them and using them and doing things with them. And from everything I'm hearing, they either love it, like it, or it doesn't bother them. I've never heard anybody like actively come out against the watch.
Yeah, but they're all Apple employees.
I know, but sometimes, you know, sometimes people in Apple grouse a lot. Like, you'll hear them grousing about like the desk arrangements in the new Apple headquarters, for example.
Yeah.
So they will let their opinions subtly be known if they have them. But a lot of them like the character because it gives them another icon. It doesn't, when you put them side by side, no one will mistake it for a Samsung or a LG or a Pixel or something.
And that's part of the point, right?
Unless they're running that Android app that puts the bar on the screen.
Foiled again.
If I lived in San Francisco, I would so want to troll people by running that on my Samsung phone and just letting people think, oh my God, look at this person who has an iPhone X. My guess is that they tried it. I wouldn't say that it was a deliberate choice. I think that they're famous for testing and trying everything. And I think that what happened was that something that might have seemed disgusting in concept, or Steve would never have done it that way, an outside Apple sort of point of view. They built it. They said, I mean, it doesn't suck, does it? And then the more they used it, they realized that they don't care about it. And then they said, well, this solves so many problems. We don't have to do this. We don't have to fix that. We don't have to adjust the vertical bezel size here. We can do edge to edge as we wanted to. And if people react that badly to it, here's 18 lines of code we added to the OS that lets you flip a switch inside settings and just turn the entire both of those ears black so that they completely blend in with the rest of the screen. So I have to say that this is it's fun to watch people's reaction to it. This is something that really doesn't matter. Either you like it or you don't like it. You are never wrong when you say how something makes you feel, but when you say that, oh, this is intrinsically a horrible design. Apple would never ship a phone like this. Oh wait, crap. I'm sorry. I just remembered. I'm not talking about an Android device. I'm talking about an Apple device. Oh well, Apple did it correctly. You know, we as a community, we spend so much time, I think, making a big deal out of things that absolutely do not matter, and in the end of the game is clearly just, you know. You know, purple flag versus blue flag. You know, you've got the wrong flag, so therefore I've got to dislike this thing.
Yeah, I have a feeling we'll probably just all accept it.
Yeah, I think I'll find it annoying. I don't like after I use it for a week, I may not notice it, but my gut reaction in the event I was too excited. It was brand new. It was shiny. It was flashy. It was HDR. Oh my God, look, it's Wonder Woman. And I didn't really get to pay attention to it. My gut reaction just on seeing pictures is that I will not like it and it will bother me. But I'm going to use it for a week or a couple weeks before rendering an opinion.
You get used to things like that.
Yeah, it's not like removing a headphone jack where there are practical results.
Yeah, that's
to
still
it.
Drives again, me crazy.
there'll be three settings: people who love it, people who don't like it but will get used to it, and then the people who just absolutely hate it. Just like we had weekly conversations, didn't we, about the new super flat keyboards on the MacBook Pros? Yeah. That there are.
Yeah, I never did get used to that. Yeah, yeah, actually exactly, caused me to abandon the MacBook, which is I feel bad. I hate to say that because I love the MacBook in every other respect, but
yeah. So it's a little bit. I think it's going to be a little less intense.
I don't think it'll be that bad. Well, Touch Bar is also polarizing. The Touch Bar is another thing I can't get used to.
Yeah. We will refer listeners to the previous 11 hours of.
Yeah, we don't need to get
about
there.
I have a data point though.
Once the 8 came out, I talked to my kids, Abby and Henry, and my mom, Mary, and said, would you like a new phone? I have the 7 Plus I could give you, or I'll get you a new 8. And none of them wanted to upgrade solely because of the headphone jack. All three of them said, no, I'm not going to abandon the headphone jack. I need the headphone jack. So I thought that was, I mean, that's completely anecdotal, but that was a telling data point.
Well, again, I think the difficulties there is that you're not giving me something. It's not like they said, we deleted the headphone jack, but that's because we've added this new thing called Bluetooth. So now you can have wireless headphones. They said, no, you had Bluetooth and you had wired headphones. We are taking one of those things away from you right now. Right. And we're not. And if there was an invoice of like on a new car, it's, oh, by the way, we saved you 18 cents by removing the headphone jack. At least I could have 18 cents in my hand. At least I could, you know, go back to 1971 and buy a Coke with that.
All three of those people, Abby, Henry, and Mary, have headphones they like to use. Yeah. They didn't want to replace the headphones. As good as the Air, I love the AirPods. I just bought a second pair because I lost my first one.
Yeah.
But
there's adapters, but people lose the adapters or they're inconvenient.
The adapter's inconvenient. Yeah. I mean, I carry my AirPods and an adapter, Yeah, I can.
The AirPod case should have an adapter in it. You should be able to pull out an adapter right from the AirPod.
And it may not be fully logical. You know, you can say, well, you just, you know, you if you have a favorite pair of headphones, you just connect the adapter to it and leave it that way. And those are lightning.
But then you get on a plane and you take them off and you put the adapter somewhere.
I'm going to grant that it may not be fully logical, but it's definitely there. It's out there in the world that people are saying, well, I want my headphone jack.
I missed parts of it. Did Google say why they deleted the headphone jack? Did they have a – I'm assuming they didn't say courage.
They didn't say courage and they didn't say anything. They just deleted it.
So another company played that card. They saw how well that one played out.
Don't say courage, whatever you do. Yeah. No, interestingly, Google didn't even mention it. They just deleted it.
they knew that people would figure it out. Yeah, I think the thing is, I think it really is like baggage fees for checked bags. There had to be one company that said, you know what, we're going to just simply start charging you $15 per bag.
Yeah,
in an environment where everybody, and instead of all the other companies complaining, saying, oh, we would never do that, they said, oh, a penguin has jumped off the ice floe into the water. Let's see what happens to that first penguin. Yeah. I mean, the realist, it was never a question of, oh, I lost the headphone jack and that was the most wonderful thing that could have possibly done for me. And thank goodness. It was, I am not willing to switch to a completely different phone platform just to get the headphone jack back. I don't like it, but I don't really feel as though I have that much of a choice in the matter. So it's when you make more serious changes, like the keyboard. And I'm sort of in your boat where I told you a while ago that I got a ThinkPad, a Lenovo ThinkPad, which has probably the best across the board keyboard you can find on a laptop these days. And so that's the upstairs computer. The MacBook is the downstairs computer. So I no longer unplug and go up and down with them. And I have to say, I'm starting to like bring the ThinkPad downstairs because even my 2016 MacBook keyboard is not feeling very good compared to a really good notebook keyboard. And it's like, oh God, everything about this notebook I love, except for the operating system it runs and except for the software that it runs.
And I would love a MacBook because I love the operating system and I love the software, but I can't use that keyboard. And I feel like it's a failing on my part. I really do. Like I should just use it.
Again, it's this is something just like the phone is something.
But you use it all the time, and you guys especially, you're writing all the time. I don't even write that much.
Yeah, but I'm totally like I said, I'm keyboard resilient. I go from an iPad, the Apple Smart Keyboard, to a MacBook Pro, and within 5 minutes, my brain is just like, oh, whatever, type. Which is actually bad for a reviewer because I wish I had stronger opinions on them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I switch between keyboards all the time too. I mean, right here in the office, I've got like these two keyboards plus the this is not a joke. Plus, I've got one of my favorite Apple keyboards, the old fashioned MacBook keyboard, which I use when I need to podcast, and so I need to be able to type silently. And then when I'm typing in anger, like for money, I've got like the really good like code clicky keyboard. So I'm switching over and over and over again. It's just that I will say objectively that, excuse me, objectively is a strong word. The keyboard on the MacBook is the one where doesn't matter how long I've been using it. Doesn't matter the use case. I'm always hating that keyboard. But again, that's another conversation.
I find it hard to switch to the 15-inch one. The 13-inch one is fine for me, but when I go to the 15-inch one, I make tons of mistakes. I wonder if it's just a scaling thing. And then I'm back on the 13, I'm fine.
Let's take a break. Lots more to talk about, including swelling batteries. How serious is it? I don't know. But I'm sure you guys will have an opinion. More about the new Apple products. We could talk a little bit about how the Google products compare. Google going head-to-head with Apple in the home speaker space. So is Sonos, for that matter.
I thought you were going to say the headphone jack deletion space.
Apple owns the headphone jack deletion space.
Do you think Motorola and HTC complained, like, we did this first and we got zero credit, and now Apple and Google are getting all
these... Well, actually, let's be fair. The very first Android phone, the HTC made G1, did not have a headphone jack.
And I had a Tilt or something, an early HTC Windows phone that didn't have one either. It had this horrible little breakout cable.
Ugh.
Been happening for years.
I used to have this really horrible Apple phone. I think it was called an iPhone, where you had to have a special adapter to plug in. It was you talk about the kick in the pants. I mean, you used a regular analog thing, but how about a custom analog? Oh goodness!
I plugged the adapter into my Lightning, Lightning adapter, my AirPods.
You have wired AirPods now, Leo.
It didn't help. I thought I could wire my AirPods.
Someone actually asked us that. They said, if you plug the Lightning headphones into the AirPods case, do you have wireless headphones? We had to say no, sadly. Does not work that way.
No.
If you can fit the case into your ear canal, yeah, you got it. Tell us how that works. Send us a picture.
Our show today brought to you by Jamf. Does Jamf stand for something? J-A-M-F. It probably does in the deep prehistory, but everybody who knows Max knows Jamf.
Jamf now is really nice. They make Apple management software for IT folks, and they make now a really nice product called Jamf Now. It's an on-demand mobile device management solution for Apple devices. If you work in an environment where you've got a bunch of Apple devices, you've got to keep track of iPads, iPhones, and Macintoshes, Jamf Now is awesome. You know, it's easy. It was easy for us when we first started. We had a handful of iPads, a handful of Macintoshes. We could do it on our own, but as you start to grow, you buy more tech for your employees, it's harder to keep track of everything, iPhones and iPads and Macs. We have a ton of them. Fortunately, we've got Jamf Now. If you lose an iPad, you can secure it remotely with Jamf Now. It makes management tasks like deploying Wi-Fi passwords, securing company data and forcing passcodes simple. And by the way, very affordable. It's inexpensive. Jamf Now lets you easily set up devices exactly like you want them, with the accounts, the applications, all, you know, the settings that you need in your workspace. So that makes it really great for your employees. Remotely configure settings too, with like Wi-Fi passwords and email account information. So for instance, if you're in a situation, which is not unusual, where you decide to change the Wi-Fi password because it's been compromised, or maybe that's your policy to change that every month, you don't have to send an email out saying the new password is. You can actually change it on the phones directly with Jamf Now. Email account information, same thing. Protect sensitive information. You can even lock or wipe a device if an employee walks out the door. Don't worry, your data won't. You can centrally deploy apps, view device details, get a 360-degree view of your inventory, and you don't need to be an IT wizard. You just need Jamf Now. So go to Jamf, JAMF.com/MacBreak, and start securing your business today. You can create a free account. And what I love is you can manage your first three devices for free forever. And adding more devices, $2 a month. That's it. JAMF.com/MacBreak. Get your free account going and your first three devices free. Jamf, JAMF.com/MacBreak. Andy Iannocco, Chicago Sun-Times. Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Leo Laporte talking about Apple and all its glory. People keep saying, why aren't you talking more about the swelling iPhones? Because how many are there total? Seven?
Six.
Six.
I think there's six still, which is, I think we talked about this last week. I talked to Jerry Hildenbrand, who's like an actual engineer. Like, he can get into electronics and do things with them. And he was giving me this, the average, it's something like one out of every so many thousand hours that lithium ion batteries have a failure rate for. And all lithium ion batteries fail because they're not a stable technology. We use them because they're the best thing we have. It's when that rate of failure becomes excessive, when it's a much higher rate than what you'd expect. And then you have a problem. And that's what happened with the Galaxy Note. But right now, every phone has failures every year. You can search meshes boards or forums or anything and find them. It's just we're hypersensitive now because we're all used to the huge brouhaha that we had with the Galaxy Note 7 and airplanes announcing them and, you know, massive amounts of
media.
How
many iPhone 8s do you think Apple's sold? It's got to be millions, right?
Millions, yeah. Absolutely.
There's millions out there. So even if you have a failure rate of 0.001%, I mean, I don't know. A 7 out of millions is a very low failure rate. I don't think it's cause for concern, and I think it happens every time.
Yeah. Totally. And I asked Jerry, and his big takeaway was that, look how nicely it splits open to prevent it from incending.
Actually, that's a good point. If the Note 7 had done that, you wouldn't have the fires. But it was so tightly sealed in there that you get short circuits.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's like having breakaway panels or something. That's a good point. Yeah.
that's a good point to make. Every time there's a brand new model of something really, really big and really, really popular, you're going to see reports like this for the first couple of weeks. The question is, do you see reports like that for the next month and a half? They tend to escalate? Do they tend to mount? And so if you have just one isolated incident of this happening, then that's law of averages. And so don't worry about the line as a whole. When Apple had its antenna problems, everybody was experiencing that, and it didn't go away after a couple of weeks. And that was clearly a problem with the design. But this is not the times that we've seen, like, remember when the first iPhone 6 Plus came out and people were concerned that, it's made out of wallpaper paste. It bends like nothing. But, okay, no, you can find people who wound up bending their phones. They didn't necessarily treat these things poorly, but the fact that you didn't really see this as a widespread epidemic indicates that this is just something that can happen to this phone as opposed to a design defect. So show me thousands of batteries that are doing this. Again, at a scale of where they're expecting to sell maybe 10 million a quarter, you'd have to really have hundreds or thousands of these batteries having a problem before you'd have to say this is a design problem as opposed to, again, law of averages.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like
last year there were Apple Watch, the first generation Apple Pod watches were swelling and the front cover was coming off and Apple just replaced them. I think there was it happened to mine. I was one of the people that it happened to.
Yeah.
And they just announced that you bring it in and they change it. And I think it was a couple dozen in the end out of however many million the first Apple Watch shipped. Yeah.
Yeah. My first pair of AirPods had that same problem.
Yeah. These things happen. I don't want to be an apologist, and we'll certainly keep an eye on it. And if it continues, totally, then that might be an issue. But at this point, 7 failures is not a significant issue. And somebody's saying, well, if you had 7 failures in an airplane, yeah, but nobody's been hurt. Anybody who had this happen presumably brought it to Apple, and I'm sure not only do they want you to, they'll immediately replace it. They want to study it. So there's no issue.
Also, if you have impact, if you do drop a phone and there's significant impact, keep an eye on it because, again, lithium-ion batteries are not the stablest things in the world. You shouldn't panic. It's contained fury, but just keep an eye on them. Yeah. And if you have any problem at all, please take them in immediately.
Here's some good news, and actually kind of interesting news. FutureMark, which does benchmarking, benchmarked old iPhone devices. They didn't have to because they collect in the database benchmark results. They have 100,000 results for 7 different iPhone models. So these are people using FutureMark. And they wanted to see, is it true that if iPhones get slower over time, people often say, my iPhone is so sluggish now. The good
Apple
news...
Apple ruined this update. It wants me to buy a new phone.
Right. Yeah, they borked my phone just so I'd get a new one. Look how flat that curve is. There is this virtually zero change. And it's not always, by the way, slower. Sometimes it's faster. The GPU, it just doesn't look like this is an issue at all.
There's a couple important things to note about this, though. One is that iPhone's slow. A lot of these reports come out every September because Google Trends spikes for that search result. And the thing to remember is that every iPhone is updated all at the same time everywhere on every carrier for every model that's supported. And that means that everybody who does think they have the problem will be Googling for it all at once, where other phones are updated throughout the year at different paces in different areas on different carriers for different models. So people who are searching for Galaxy S something slow – it's not everyone in humanity all at the same time doing it. Those search results are normalized across the entire year. And the other thing is they are only testing for processor performance. And that's to show that Apple did not put code in there to deliberately make your processor slower or deliberately make your CPU slower. It doesn't say whether this version of iOS wasn't as well optimized or dropped frames or developers didn't support older versions of apps as well. And they're slower to launch or slower to have UI interactions.
Those things happen, for sure.
All those things can be true. Yeah. And Apple has a performance team. There's a team called the performance team that they have. Their job is to make sure these devices run really fast. They have older models. A lot of people in Apple and all the organizations use older models as part of that testing, and also all their families, their parents, their siblings, their kids, their friends use older iPhones. So they would be really angry if anything was done to artificially make those iPhones slow. It's just that they're releasing so many versions, and it's not until you get in the hands of millions of people that you really see what you need to optimize in the code, which is why .1 and .2 are usually much better performing than .0 ever is.
It's also something Apple doesn't need to do. People want new iPhones. They will buy them. You don't have to artificially create a market.
Well, they want you to keep buying iPhones, so they want you to feel there's value and longer-term value in the iPhone.
Good point.
Also, secondhand iPhone use is kind of their response to how come you're not selling an $80 phone like the Android ecosystem does. And you get back to something that we've been saying, everyone's been saying for 10, 15, 20 years, that the computer that you buy, unlike a car, will always run always do the thing you bought it for with the apps that you started using it with exactly as well on day 10,000 edits as it did on day one. So if you have your iPhone 5 or your iPhone 5 and you've been using essentially the same class and suite of apps. It'll certainly run great. Like Renee says, it's kind of, I would require incredibly good proof that Apple was intentionally trying to sandbag older phones. I think you run into performance problems when you start running apps when you start running apps that are really designed for modern hardware, where the developer really isn't running it on an iPhone 5 to see what it looks like on an iPhone 5, then sure, it's going to seem sluggish. But particularly if you've got the third hand-me-down and you see that mom or dad who's got the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10, that, my God, this Instagram filter runs so much faster on this other phone. So yeah, it's Apple has way too much requires way too much of the older phones to intentionally sandbag performance like that.
And
I install as new, just as a tip, if you do think your iPhone is slower, you're having a lot of problems, it is a complete pain in the apps to do, but I typically install new on at least one phone every time because I feel like that's the clean start. No bit rot, no incompatibilities, no problems with old backups, just a fresh start, and that hardware will usually last a while.
Not a bad idea. And if it's getting slow, wipe the phone and start over.
Especially with so much to sync now, so much data is in the cloud and so much is synced. It's not nearly as onerous as it used to be to reinstall. Yeah.
Not only that, but it's you know how it is. You there'll be like a 99-cent app or it's a free app with in-app purchases. And after about 8 or 9 months, you don't realize that I have 231 apps on my phone. How did that happen? And it really is a lot faster just to simply say, what if I just simply create? I will simply zorch this phone, start from scratch again, and I will not visit the app store and look for apps to install. I will simply, and this is something that I do with every new device, including every new laptop that I have. It's at the point which I need BBEdit, that's when I download BBEdit. At the point at which I need Microsoft Word. That's when I download Microsoft Word. And after 2 or 3 weeks, I've realized that it's been a week since I downloaded anything. And oh my God, I've gone from 230 something apps down to like 41.
It's funny you should say that because I've just this last couple of weeks on the radio show have added a new security recommendation, which is exactly that. Don't install anything. Install when you need it and not before then. Because every app you install, it's more true on computers than it is on phones, but it's true for everywhere. Every app you install has the potential for adding flaws, reliability issues, and even security issues. And so if we all reinstall all our apps, and that's a mistake. I recently went through a prune, actually I did it on my Android device preparing for the new Pixel. And I got 60 or 70 apps I deleted that I just hadn't used. I do love there's a new feature in the iPhone that I really like. Did they add this in iOS 11, Renee?
Yes.
Notices it says, if you don't, we'll delete apps you don't use, basically.
Yeah. It'll keep the data if you need them again, but it'll remove them to, if you're low on storage, it'll remove them to create space and then re-download them.
I said, turn that on. And I have some apps that have a little icon that says, well, it's not on your phone, but if you need it, we'll get it. I think that's a great idea.
It's super important, too, because increasingly messaging apps are becoming platforms. And when you have old messaging apps, we saw that with Skype a couple of months ago, where all of a sudden you're getting DMs from friends telling you to click on links, and you think it's a friend, and you click on it, and then you're the next person who's victimized, or you get it in WhatsApp or a Twitter DM or something. And if you're not using a messaging app, it's one less attack vector for people to exploit.
So where do you turn that feature on? Is it an iPhone storage in general?
Yeah, it should be in the App Store, I believe, but I'll double check.
Somewhere there's a feature.
In Settings App Store.
Settings App Store. All right, let me check.
This
is something I just stumbled on, and I went, wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah, at the very bottom, offload unused apps.
Okay, so if you go to Settings, iTunes, and App Store, there's a switch, offload unused apps, automatically remove unused apps, but keep all documents and data, reinstalling the app will place back your data if the app is still available in the App Store. Turn that on. Right away, right? That is fantastic.
Anything you can do to make a smaller
video
attack.
Autoplay.
Yes.
The bane of my existence video. So that is a nice feature. But in the first place, don't install them in the first place, and you'll save yourself a lot of. I'm just curious how many apps I have on here. Let's see.
It also bears mentioning that a lot of these apps in the background are going to sap your battery a little bit.
Right.
So I think that a lot of the complaints are people with old phones with new operating systems is, again, it's slower, but also, oh my God, what a hit my battery is taking. Again, I do this in real life as well. Every 10 years or so, I do what I call the big edit, which is I have to go through every. I'm not even joking. I go through every single. The goal is to put eyes or hands on every single object I own, both like inside the house and in storage everywhere, and try to make the decision. I put this into storage 5 years ago because I thought I could do something with it. I now have no emotional attachment to it. I'm going to get rid of it. I'm doing this like just before Halloween, so it looks like everybody who comes to my house is going to get some sort of like off-brand MP3 player from 2006, 2007. Like, oh, thank you, Yuosho player. Oh, good. 30 songs in my pocket. Thank you very much, Mr. Inatko.
There is a Swedish term. I read this. I must have read it on Reddit. Where else would you read it? But there's a Swedish term for what you do in your life as you get older and you start getting rid of things so your children aren't stuck with all your crap when you die. And it's a great
sure
term.
Not German, like Schadenjunker or something.
Yeah, it's like Schadenjunker. It is. It's
the kid includes 8 matches and an alibi.
Georgia gave me a great tip a little while ago because like she said, never go through a drawer and just take stuff out you don't think you want. You take everything out of the drawer, then only put back what you absolutely want to keep, and it results in you getting rid of way more things than the other way around.
I like that. Georgia has probably a lot of tricks like that. She's very
awesome
good.
Awesome life hacker.
Yeah. That is a good look. So do that with your phone. Delete stuff. Yep. Or better yet, the equivalent of taking everything out and only putting back the stuff you need is wipe your phone when you get a new phone, yep. Wipe it and start from scratch and only install stuff as you need it.
Nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
Nuke it from orbit. Good news, I guess, if you're an Apple fan, the average American.
If you're a shareholder.
Yeah, if you're an Apple shareholder, owns more than 2 Apple products. This is the CNBC. Whoops, pushed a button and I went to the wrong page. This is the CNBC All America Economic Survey. 64% of Americans now own at least 1 Apple product. The average American household reports owning 2.6 Apple products. Of course, income has something to do with it. The wealthiest Americans own 4.7 per household. The poorest Americans 1, but even they have 1, yep. Which is just remarkable.
Renee, how much are you skewing these results with all your bands and all your watches?
I think just the 3 of us alone have pushed this way over illegal.
Do bands count? Because if bands count, I'm in deep trouble.
Oh, Leo. Oh, no. You just totally changed. I got to redo the math.
Let's just say all bands count as 1 Apple product.
Yeah.
Fair. I'm just sitting here with 3 Apple products in my pocket. You know, I have an iPad, iPhone, and an Apple Watch. And then there's Macs at home, and there's multiple phones, multiple iPads. Yeah. So I can't think of what other category, what other company would you say 64% of Americans own at least 1 Kleenex?
Sony in their heyday?
I would say if you're going to include components, Samsung has to be in there. Because they've got components inside every iPhone.
Well, plus that's true.
So many other electronics.
All your NAND flash belongs to them.
Well, we talked about this last week. Samsung makes more money off the iPhone 8 than it does off the Note 8 or the S8 because it makes some there's like Samsung parts all
over. Like Google makes so much money off iPhone search. Right. You know, it's like everyone's making money off the iPhone.
Yeah. It just shows you when you have something this phenomenally successful, it spins off money.
It's got gravity.
There's money's falling off of it all. It's making it rain everywhere it goes.
We need that Jeff Leo with an iPhone making it rain.
Apple TV at home. Have you got your new Apple TV yet, Renee?
I do, and I have the LG C7P. OLED HDR TV.
You did a review of it, so I think we talked about that last week.
Can't stop looking at it. Once
still
you go,
like it?
Again, it's not the 4K, it's the HDR. Once you get HDR, you can't go back.
Yep.
It's like it's like a layer of gray has been removed from your world.
Yeah, it's true. Let's see.
I felt the same way when my sister moved out of the house.
By the way, 64% of Americans say their time on their smartphone is mostly productive and useful. 27% say it's mostly unproductive. And young people, Midwesterners, and those with a high school education only are most likely to report wasting time on their smartphones.
Candy Crush players.
That's a lot of time. You know, I think the 64% aren't just not being honest with themselves. I think it's pretty obvious most of the time you spend on a smartphone is wasted. As for usage, it's dominated by phone calls, emails, and text, followed by social media. Few Americans say watching videos, playing games, and shopping are the main uses for their handheld.
Surprised phone calls are still that high.
I am too. I think really social media, for me anyway.
And messaging.
And messaging together. And I consider messaging kind of like social media, right? It's interesting. Overall, it continues to be the case, says CNBC. There were 800 respondents, by the way, and a margin error of plus and minus 3.5 percentage points. Overall, it continues to be the case the smartphone is really helping the American worker, helping the American family be efficient with their time and accomplish more than they could otherwise. And I think people recognize and appreciate that. Well,
yeah, they don't understand that we can waste time with anything, Leo. We don't need a smartphone to waste time. True. I used to waste time with mud and cardboard.
Right. I thought that was, but yeah, that's pretty encouraging news for Apple. It just shows over and over, I mean, what a dominant brand Apple is. It has become.
I think, it also shows how faithful Apple users are. I think that, for instance, with Android, with Windows, there are people who use these things and they may even like these things, but they don't feel any sort of emotional attachment to any one logo. They might have a Lenovo notebook, and but then a Dell desktop, and then another device, and then a smart device made by somebody else. If you had a good start with an iPhone, you are probably going to think favorably about a MacBook, and then when Apple comes up with their own TV box, you don't have to be a fanboy to think, well, maybe the first thing I'm going to look at is this Apple one because I like Apple products; they've done right by me, and they'll work well with what I have. So,
let's take a little break. Lots more to talk about. Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun Times, Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Our show today brought to you by. I love it. It's like a lottery. It's a mystery. All right. Just look at the screen. I could have said IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is one of Twit's great success stories. Tim Broom and Dom Pezet came to us. I had done an NAB panel on Twit and what we were doing. They were fans of the screensavers. They were also, though, IT trainers, and they'd been doing it for a long time. After the panel at NAB, they came up and said, would you mind if we made an IT training business that's similar to Twit, but it focuses on IT and IT skills? I said, by all means, go right ahead. And IT Pro TV was born, and I have to say, at this point, it's completely eclipsed Twit. They now have 5 studios, 120. Twit does about, I don't know, 30 hours of content a week. They do 125 hours every week. They have 2,000 hours. That's got to be out of date. They've got even more now, more than 2,000 hours of online, on-demand training in every possible IT field, including a lot of Mac stuff, Mac management basics, Apple-certified support professional, ITIL, Amazon, of course, Microsoft. Thing is, you can watch these anywhere. You can watch them. They have a great Apple TV app or Chromecast or Roku or Fire TV. Of course, you can watch on your PC. They've got IT Pro TV apps on iOS and Android. So you can watch it anywhere. In fact, I know people who have it on their big screen TV at home, and then they get in the car and they keep listening on their phone, and they get to work and they will stream it on their computer. It's a great way either to get that first job in IT, to get those certs that make it possible, but also it's a great way to keep your skills up. And this is where IT Pro TV's team solution is so great. Group pricing. You'll get a supervisor portal, which allows you to keep an eye on how your team is learning. Schedule. View logins, viewing time, video downloads, course completion tracking. You can create custom groups and training assignments. See individual and group analytics. It's a great way to kind of keep your team up to date and very affordable. So for individuals, but also for teams, IT Pro TV. Go to itpro.tv/MacBreak and find out how IT Pro TV can help you or your team get the best IT training out there. Engaging, it's fun, it's easy, it's the easiest possible way to learn. And I meet people now all the time who got into IT thanks to IT Pro TV. It's kind of a natural segue, frankly, from what we do here. You want to get a free 7-day trial? You could sign up for an individual monthly membership and use the offer code MacBreak30, MacBreak30. If you decide to stick around, you'll receive 30% off your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. 30% off forever. And if you're interested in the team solution, go to itpro.tv/MacBreak and sign up for a free demo of their supervisor portal. Or tell, you know, if you're in a group and you tell your boss and your boss wants to sign up for it, but please have your boss use that URL. Because that's a big deal for us. If you go to itpro.tv/MacBreak, it really helps the show and helps convince that Tim and Don should keep buying advertisement on our show. itpro.tv/MacBreak. I feel kind of responsible for them. They've really done a great job there in Gainesville, Florida. We went there for the opening of their new studio. Boy, is it beautiful. It is gorgeous. We thank you for their support, itpro.tv/MacBreak. Apple will not give up its ambitions for creating great TV content. They haven't done it yet, but they did, remember, hire two Sony executives, and now they've done a deal with Steven Spielberg, okay? They're gonna
Have you heard of him?
Yeah, I've heard of him. Did you see the documentary on Spielberg?
I did not.
Oh, on HBO. It's must see. Fantastic.
Hey, awesome.
And you may or may not remember, he did a sci-fi series in the mid-80s called Amazing Stories. Didn't last that long, but did win 5 Emmy Awards. Apple's has bought the rights. They're going to create 10 new episodes with NBC Universal and Spielberg's Amblin Entertainment. $5 million an episode. So that's a big $50 million commitment here. Spielberg will be executive producer, according to the Wall Street Journal. This is the first series they've taken on since they hired those two, Zach Van Amberg and Jamie Ehrlich from Sony. Those two produce shows like Breaking Bad, The Crown, Better Call Saul. And so they have some pretty good chops. So,
yeah. Planet of the Apes. Remember years ago we talked about this, Eddie? I'm sorry, Leo, remember we talked about this years ago? And
are you thinking of me as Eddie Q? Come on, don't say that.
I was going to say an Eddie Q thing, and then I transitioned, and only half of my brain transitioned. But we were talking about this for years on MacBreak, especially Alex, about Apple getting into their own content.
Well, but then they did Planet of the Apes and Carpool Karaoke, and we thought, oh, geez. But this will be the first show that is, I think, a little closer to the mark.
Yeah.
Also, it leverages what's so important about this kind of television, where Amazing Stories, I think it lasted 2 seasons, wasn't it?
Yeah, only 2. Two or three.
And each one was like a little movie. It wasn't like all these reboots of The Twilight Zone where it's like minimal sets. Let's move the entire production to wherever Canada outsources its movie and video production out to
Northwest Territories, sir. Money.
Exactly. What works great is these series that don't have to return ratings on an episode by episode basis, where the idea is investing in a collection of episodes that are people going to be coming back to time and time and time again. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we saw CBS do the entire new series of a Star Trek directly to streaming. Because they think partly because they need something to get the average age of the CBS viewer on streaming a little bit down. It's all like Bob Newhart show and CSI, but also because this way they can actually shoot the entire series. They know that they're going to have a new thing that they can then sell in perpetuity without having to respond to how come it got beaten by the Big Bang Theory repeats 3 weeks in. So this is I would much rather see them do something like this, which has the possibility, if it's like anything like its originator, to be interesting and unique and deeply, deeply, wonderfully weird than something a knockoff of The Apprentice. Knockoff of Shark Tank, and then an expanded version of a really funny 6-minute video thing on a 12:30 a.m. talk show, as good as it is.
I do think that it'll this this it all started with HBO really creating that kind of super high quality television. And the reason I've talked to creators who've gone to HBO, the reason people went to HBO is because they got freedom. They got money, yeah. They got budget, but more importantly for them, they're creatives, they got the freedom. Apple needs to do the same thing. It needs to show creatives that this is a good place to bring your projects that will not just give you money, but that you will have creative freedom. You'll be able to make something high quality. You'll get an audience. Although I think audience is almost secondary. When you go to, you know, HBO, you're guaranteed smaller.
No, it's subscription. It's not the audience. It's getting, maintaining, and increasing subscription bases.
Well, for Apple's point of view, but I'm saying from the creator's point of view, people like Dana Brunetti, who was this close to going with a major standard network provider, but got a call from Netflix the night before they signed the deal and decided to sell House of Cards to Netflix. Partly it was $100 million, but what Dana Brunetti said was, he's the producer for Trigger Street that produced House of Cards. It was the thing that he liked, weirdly enough, and that Kevin Spacey liked, was that they would do a whole series at once so people could binge it. They thought that was important. And they really liked that compared to what HBO or whoever else they were talking to would have done. It's that kind of thing that Apple can offer them. Creatives are so I think getting Spielberg is a very important start. Now, Spielberg being executive producer may merely mean they write him a check every week. But if they could get him to direct an episode, for instance, if you could really see that somebody like of Spielberg's caliber was
just
saying,
attaching his name,
it helps. And getting the word out, this is a good place to do content. That's what's going to have to happen before Apple can create these prestige products.
They're going to have to show some shows. I think that was the criticism previously. It's like Apple's talking about it, but we don't know what an Apple TV show means. And this is their chance to show creatives in the industry what an Apple TV show means.
Well,
like you said, they have to offer these creators something other than an audience. And right now, Hulu can give them an audience. Netflix can give them an audience. Apple TV. Apple cannot give them an audience. But to give you the worst examples, this is why people are screaming away from network television. There's a blog that I read written by Ken Levine. Might be Levine. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing the name. But he's been writing and directing TV for the past 20 or 30 years. And he does Q&A every single Friday. And it just seems so horrible what's been happening in network television over the past 10 or 15 years. Where he says that someone asked him a question about, hey, there's a guy who in this episode of Frasier who said this one line. Who was he? He's, oh, well, that's a friend of the cast or whatever. And then he goes on to say that that was back in the time where if you had an actor who only had to say one line, you could just cast whoever you thought was going to do a good job. But these days, even if it's just one line, the network needs to see five choices and needs to approve the choice. And when you in that sort of environment, when you give them an option of we will give you your budget, all we ask you to do is to deliver these episodes on time. And we don't even know how to drive from Silicon Valley to where your studio is. So just deliver it on time. That's got to be a huge, huge attraction. I wouldn't be surprised if Spielberg did direct the first episode. I think there's actually I remember when Boardwalk Empire got started, produced by Martin Scorsese, one of the reasons why he directed the first episode, and one of the reasons why is that if you direct the first episode, you have a piece of the entire series. Even if you're not Martin Scorsese, even if you're not Steven Spielberg. But it would also just be, who's not going to tune in just to see anything directed by Steven Spielberg?
Yeah.
His triumphant return set the to language television for the after show. Columbo.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the original director also often creates the language that other directors follow when doing the show.
The Bible is
a huge.
So good news. I think that's very good, encouraging news for Apple's efforts. It's not clear, but I hope they don't do this. But I guess that they'll make it an Apple Music exclusive, right? And you have to have Apple
Music. At least first, and then you'll be able to buy it on iTunes or something.
Oh, maybe. It would be nice because I really don't want Apple Music. I guess I would subscribe to it if it was the only way.
That's what they want. They want to have enough good content that you subscribe and keep renewing that subscription. They'll need a better name eventually, though, than Apple.
Well, but it's interesting because really there's not much differentiator between Spotify, Google Music, Amazon Music, Apple Music, Tidal, Deezer, all of these. And you got to find a differentiator, whether it's exclusives or, in this case, exclusive
video. Netflix raised their prices right before Stranger Things season 2.
Funny?
I mean, that's what you want. You want that sort of attractor.
Although this is a good time for Apple because both Netflix and especially Amazon are struggling a little bit with their original stuff. It's not as – they don't have the breakout things that they had last year and the year before. Amazon,
and
there's
Netflix
been articles
has no
about
additional businesses. Like right. At least Amazon has so many other products that they
that's
can,
right,
like Microsoft, just fuel
it.
Businesses they want to be in, yeah. Where Netflix doesn't have that. And Apple, of course, has more money than the earth. So
speaking
they,
of Amazon, here comes the battle
want.
Of the home of the intelligent assistant enabled home speakers. It's a new category. Apple, of course, is going to come out with its HomePod in December. Google this week announced that they're going to do the a Google Home, well, two of them. One, the Google Home Mini that looks like a pink donut to compete with the Amazon Dot. And then Google Home Max, which looks like it's directly aimed at Apple's HomePod. It looks like a Sonos speaker, yeah. But they made a big point about how it will auto-tune the sound depending on where it is in the room. That's, of course, something... Yeah. Apple says the HomePod will do. Sonos does it, but with a little more intervention on your part. You have to, you know, select it and do all that. So,
and Sonos is going to have every assistant on it, so they can just talk to themselves and finally leave you alone.
I immediately turned on that. Sonos also had an announcement on October 4th, and I immediately turned on Echo integration with Sonos. It works great. I mean... It was all that was missing on Sonos is the ability to talk to it. It's hard to overestimate how important that is.
Yeah, and like I said, it didn't seem like when Apple introduced the HomePod, it didn't seem like that. I couldn't go along with the idea that this was a really bad sign for Sonos. All they have to do is sign a deal, and suddenly they have a home assistant. It's not a problem.
Well, there may have been technical issues because they'd been talking about this Amazon integration up, this Echo integration up for more than a year. So there may have been some
talking about AirPlay for 3 years, and they finally did that.
Well, they haven't done it yet. They said next year AirPlay support, and they're going to support Siri, I think, but Google Assistant for sure.
Siri by proxy.
Yeah.
Just sort of like Seppuku by proxy, but we won't get into that.
Well, and technically it's interesting. I don't know exactly. We should do some digging to figure this out because all you do is you connect an Echo Dot to a Sonos speaker through the line in, and somehow it magically lights up the whole network. And so now I can talk to any of my Echoes and command any of my Sonoses. All I have to do is have one Sonos connected to one Dot. I don't understand how that works at all.
It's a meshing of the mesh, Leo. It's a meshing of the mesh.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of that just to say, play me some Doobie Brothers.
They're going to outnumber us. There's three people in the house, but 19 assistants.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that happens, you put the Echo app, you have the Echo app on your iPhone. You say, go find devices. And all of a sudden, magically, it finds all the Sonoses, which it never saw before. Ooh. So they're all on the same Wi-Fi. And so it says, oh, I see all these Sonoses. And now I ended up renaming my Sonoses so that the commands would be, you know, play the Doobie Brothers on the kitchen Sonos, because it was getting a little confusing. Because I have Echoes everywhere too, and I will be buying a HomePod, and I already put down an order for the Home Max, the Echo. I mean, the Google Home Max.
Google Home. Yeah.
So I think we're going to what the pressure is going to be is, I think, on consumers is pick an ecosystem. Increasingly. And Neil I. Patel wrote about this with the Bluetooth headphones and the headphone jack. He says, well, it's really all about getting you in an ecosystem, because if you really want your iPhone to work great, you're going to get AirPods. If you really want your new Pixel to work great, you're going to get the what do they call them? The Pixel Buds.
Buds, yeah.
It's like lenses for cameras all over again.
It is, isn't it? You choose an ecosystem.
Yes and no. The thing is, people aren't going to buy a HomePod plus a Google Home Super Biggie plus a third speaker to try head to head.
They're going
to
pick one.
They're going to probably buy whatever will fit in with whatever they've got right now. It's going to sound perfectly fine, and then they're going to simply go with it. And they're not going to be disappointed. They're not going to feel rooked at all because
what they're going to pick is they're going to say, well, what's my phone? Oh, it's an iPhone. I'm going to pick the HomePod. What's my phone? Oh, it's a Google Pixel. I'm going to pick the Google Pod. Google Maps.
And then when you want to change phones, you have to change everything. In your house.
Well, but that's
about lock-in, right?
Yeah, but you have the choice of picking something else. You know, I mean, that is
and we're just showing the article that says you can now, if you have an Android app, use AirPods with Google Assistant, but you know what? That's going to be kludgy, and it's not going to always work. I mean, that's...
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm famous for saying that I'm an Android user, but my favorite earphones are actually AirPods. They work great as Bluetooth headphones.
How'd you get that logo on there? That's kind of cool.
That's a Rebel Alliance.
He's a Rebel Alliance guy.
You have to have your adopted uncles burned to death by the hateful empire.
That's also the symbol on the Sikh church right outside my house, by the way. I think that's where Lucas probably got it from.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's a Sikh symbol? Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know, but the Sikh church right across from my, or the Sikh temple right across from my house has almost exactly the same logo.
I realized that I have so many friends who have AirPods. If I did not differentiate mine, I wasn't concerned about swapping earwax so much as I was concerned with, you know, doing that pat down before you get up from like a lunch with somebody. Say, oh my god, I almost left my AirPods behind, and then putting them in my pocket, and then like when I get home, realize, oh, I've got three pairs of AirPods in my pocket. I took other people's AirPods.
Inaco.
They are just very generic, aren't they?
That's Jordan has the pack of gum stickers on hers.
Can you buy a sticker? What is that? Is it a job?
No, that's a Rebel Alliance sticker that I'm sure is completely licensed.
No, it's a Sikh temple. It's a Sikh temple sticker. Yeah. That's what it is.
Andy has wandered off.
I'm sorry. Were we boring you, Andy? What happened? He's disappeared. He got up and disappeared.
No, the Lucas lawyers arrived.
I think Darth Vader showed up at the door. Here he comes.
The new trailer.
Sorry, I just I needed to give you a complete answer, and so there are people on eBay with like really good like laser cutters.
So you can buy really good
Rebel Alliance stickers.
He's got like a really Rebel Alliance bicycle helmet. Nice.
There you go.
Yeah.
And one on my bike too, so that if someone steals my bike, I can say, "I'm sorry, I don't believe you are gold leader. I am gold leader."
It's just like shooting womp rats, I tell you.
Exactly. Oh, nice.
They're like a buck 25. You can even get them as big as like your Christmas decorations on the door.
I don't want any spoilers. I have intentionally not watched the trailer. In fact, I was watching the Monday Night Football game and I looked away when they showed the Last Jedi trailer, but I'm sure Renee Ritchie watched it and has already analyzed it.
There's Star Wars-y things in it. There's Star Wars-y things in it, Leo. I'm not big on the... I don't Zapruder the trailers to look for things. Good. It made me feel like Star Wars, and I was happy.
I saw a animated GIF by GIF analysis of that trailer.
Yes, nerds are wondrous people. I just want that feeling.
But I will admit, I immediately went online, fast forwarded in my local theater's ticket sales to December 14th and bought six seats for the first show.
I couldn't do it. I spent an hour trying to get tickets and I couldn't do it. It was like, it just would not use my combination of, like, I don't want to, but it was.
You got to move to Petaluma.
Horrible. I do. The funny thing though is I don't want to pay that close attention to Star Wars movies because it inevitably ruins it for me. There was this great comic panel right after Rogue One came out where Princess Leia is on the blockade runner and she's like, I am an ambassador. This is a consular ship. And Vader's like, no, you just stole the plans. I saw you. I saw you see me. I was right there. I followed you here. You saw me following you. And it changes the context of the movie. So I just, as long as it makes me feel Star Wars-y, I'm happy.
You've spoiled it for me now.
it is like that. Like there are sites that they understand the idea of spoilers. We're not going to tell you that, you know, they won't tell you how Empire Strikes Back ends even 30 years later, but they will say like, here's how they got like a teenage Harrison Ford to appear in the new, like, okay, now I know that Harrison Ford as a teenager appears as a character in this. Thank you very much. That would have been a lovely surprise.
I don't want to hear anything because I want to see this. This is going to be a really good challenge for the next three months.
Contradictions in canon, because, you know, that's just a level of detail that's beyond me. I just want to enjoy a good movie.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right.
Not to turn this into a movie podcast, but okay, we are in like the after iPhone announcement lull, so we have time. But that's one thing that kind of gets me. I don't like it when they expand what's going on. I don't like it when we find out that,
oh, but did you know that there was actually an OSS agent who was also looking for the Ark of the Covenant? And the reason why that Indy happened upon this person who could sneak him in was that he was actually this agent in disguise. It's like, no, you're changing the movie without changing a frame of the original Raiders of the Lost Ark. You are changing the movie. Now you're changing this guy who, you know, is making it up as he goes along and as seems to be guided by the hand of God to know there was some tough as nails Wonder Woman character and some angry Scotsman with a grudge who was actually who's actually making sure that Marion got off the transport truck before the thing blew up. Like, no,
that's why I won't watch the new Aliens movies. I banned them from my canon. They're like Star Wars prequels to me.
I'm sorry I brought this up.
Sorry, Leo. Although I am thrilled that this is the first time that I could get reserved seats, so I will not be waiting in line. I
so
just will
great,
be
right?
showing up for the 6 p.m. showing December 14th with five of my close personal friends. We'll be auctioning off those tickets a little later on.
So great.
iOS 11.1 is coming with new emoji.
So great.
Hedgehog, or is that a porcupine?
It's a hedgehog.
It looks like a hedgehog to me.
Hedgehog. I see
it's
hedgehog.
A scary grasshopper. Very high res, mittens, scarves, trench coats.
Those are the Canadian emoji. There's even a
this should be
a curling stone.
There is a curling stone, which is really wild. Look at that.
There it is. Hurry.
Wow. That is curling played in any other country besides Canada?
The Scandinavians play.
Because I thought the emojis had to be kind of universal.
Well, I'm sure it's big in Japan. I mean, that's where emojis originated. So,
yeah, curling is huge in Japan. As are wizards, elves, or is that a fairy, vampires, and mermaids.
But it's so funny because a lot of people just roll their eyes at this. But the minute this was announced, there was a bunch. Like, I have friends who are civilians who are not in the industry. Yeah. They're like, oh, I got to get those emoji. They're going to upgrade for no other feature in iOS 11 other than getting
this. This is the one I'm going to upgrade for. It looks like hook 'em horns, but it isn't. This is I Love You in ASL, and I think that's awesome.
You can tell it's not the iPhone 10 display because the thumb is out. Otherwise, it would just be the horns.
Okay, I get it. I get what you're saying. The thumb makes it I Love You. All right.
Yes.
I'm willing to wager that will be the most used emoji ever of all time. Hearts.
Mind blown is pretty good. The expletive angry face.
Yeah, that's a good one. Here's the angry face. And there's I guess the Monopoly man, there's a monocle happy face.
The 1%.
Yeah, that's the 1%er. Broccoli? This is not going to be the most used.
That's terrible. With a lot of these, the part of the fun is trying to figure out a year from their release, what sexual act or body part is going to be used? That, is it going to represent?
Well, see, that's the point. That's why I think it will not be widely used. It's just broccoli.
Hey, man, I want a broccoli.
That's it. It's broccoli. And finally, they have an emoji that looks like me. Look. Oh, you got them.
Yeah, iOS. The beta came out yesterday for the developers, and I think the public beta comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, because I have 11.1, but I'm on the public beta, so I don't have it yet.
Yeah, and it's beta 2. Beta 2 also brings back the 3D touch swipe to multitask, which a lot of people like.
That has been driving me crazy because I didn't know it was taken out.
I keep pressing
really hard on the left side saying, come on, I know you're there, and it won't work.
Yeah, it was taken out. Then it was brought back for iOS 11.1 beta 2. So once you get that, you'll be back in work.
Craig Federighi said there was Eddie Q said there was a technical reason why they took it out. I don't understand.
But. Yeah, I think they were trying to unify how the gestures would work between multiple devices, especially with iPhone 10 coming out. But then there was a bit of a pushback on it. I think.
Do you think that's why it's not technical? They're bringing it back because people yelled.
I think it was fun. Like, there's always these, like, again, the discussions we have externally are the same discussions they have internally. And previously, the people who thought having a unified gesture vocabulary would be better won out on that one. And then they're like, oh, all these people want it and leave, and there's no reason not to give it to them. And I believe some people at the event even had it on there because they were running iPhone 11.1 already. So we got a sort of a hint that it was coming back because they were using it. And now everybody has it back.
Huh. Yeah, I use it. You know why I use it? LastPass. Because that's the one time I really often am switching back and forth between apps. I need a password, I switch to LastPass, and that makes it really easy to...
And you can go literal back. Like, if you just go all the way across, it goes right back to the previous app. It doesn't give you the multitask selector.
Exactly. So it's really an easy way to do it. I mean, you could still double-press the home button to get the same thing. But I really liked that swipe. Once I learned it, it took me a while to learn it. Let's talk about High Sierra. So... I keep checking on my Mac. I have it on as a beta on one, but on the other Mac, it's not pushing it. It's just offering it in the App Store. When do they start saying there's an update for Mac OS?
It should give you a notification telling you that it's in the App Store. They often stage it out so that not everybody's downloading it at once. So it might be a week or 2 weeks after release.
But it's been a while. It's not like a regular update where it says, "Oh, you have updates. Press the button and it updates it." You actually have to kind of. There's more explicit.
You have to want it.
You have to want it. Yeah. Okay. I want
it. Because computers are still treated differently, and it's not like we're going to force everybody to update. They want you to decide.
In fact, there's some good reasons because of APFS. It's not compatible with a Fusion drive, although that's coming. There have been some issues with APFS breaking Time Machine. There's some stuff with the new file system that causes problems. So I can understand. Now, they do have a bug fix. Did that come out?
Two big bugs. Yeah, so it's a special update. I forget what the actual term was. Supplemental update. That's it, and it fixed two things. One was APFS was the disk utility GUI, not the command line version. But if you're using the GUI, it was storing the password in the password hint field incorrectly, and then displaying it to you. Yeah. I mean, the chances of someone running across, like someone who has access,
they'd have to have access to your machine. Yeah, so that doesn't bother me.
But they'd have to have access to your computer, but not access to a drive that you created a secondary secure container on without giving them back. So it's not. But I mean, that stuff just should never happen. And then it also fixed the issue with keychain, forcing keychain passwords by requiring a login for keychain.
So that will be the 10.13 supplemental update.
Yeah,
you probably do want to get that if you've upgraded to High Sierra. I think this might now be, once this comes out, it might be time to get High Sierra if you've been putting it off or no. What do you think?
I mean, most people will not see a change. It's incredible. Like, it looks almost exactly like Sierra looked. If you're not running SD drives, like if you have a hard drive or a Fusion drive, you won't even be asked for APFS, so that'll be largely irrelevant to you.
But you want it if you have an SSD, don't you? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it absolutely is better with SSDs. And also, and just because the system is hardened more, like it has protection for firmware and things like that. Just better security features.
There's an EFI issue. Somebody studied Macs. And by the way, it's all PCs that use EFI are vulnerable. EFI often, if the update fails, doesn't warn you that it's failed and never tries again. Yeah. So they found that many Macs were running older, insecure, out-of-date versions of the EFI firmware. But there is a firmware checker in the High Sierra that will say, "Oh, you're out of date. Let's update." That's, I suspect, related, but maybe not. There are good reasons, but the biggest reason is the new file system. Now, did they enable snapshots? Somebody called me this week on the radio show saying my Time Machine broke with APFS, or I had to redo it. And I wanted to say, well, most of these copy and write file systems have a snapshot capability. I know APFS theoretically does, which would make Time Machine kind of easier. It would work better.
Use the mobile Time Machine, which was never functioned properly under core storage.
So are they? But they didn't enable that right away.
I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe that snapshots are in there. It seems like APFS is not well enough documented for developers that people like Carbon Copy Cloner and
Super Duper would love to use that snapshot.
It can get in there and figure out APFS to the degree that they need to, and that's something Apple has to fix.
Well, that will come in time.
Something that's not well understood is that Apple is actually documenting this stuff for themselves at the same time that they're writing all this stuff. So outside developers, they are often at the day of release, they have no idea how any of this works or any idea of how to test it. So that's one of the reasons why third-party utilities take a long time to catch up. And if it seems like a backup utility in particular is kind of dragging its heels, it's not. It's just it's working its contacts. It's using backdoor access to people they know at Apple.
It's tearing its hair out, not dragging its heels.
Right. I mean, there are times when people will just you'll find that a developer is suddenly not available for lunch or whatever for like a month before the new operating system comes out. And suddenly their Instagram is like all pictures of San Francisco and all pictures of Cupertino, even though they're from Ames, Iowa. It's like that's because they are basically living in a hotel suite near the Apple campus and just running inside and out saying, hi, yeah, you see this big purple smoking hole in the screen? That's what happened after I implemented this piece of API that you told me was going to work well. So yeah,
here's a blog named Mac Lovin. So I'm not sure if I should trust it or not. MacLovin.org that says that you can do a snapshot from the command line, sudo tmutil snapshot, and if you do that, you can use the Mac OS recovery utilities. You'll see that snapshot as restore from a Time Machine backup, and then it will actually show you the snapshots. So this is something worth looking into. It even calls them snapshots. They call them Time Machine local snapshots. But what a snapshot is it's essentially how would you describe it? Is it like a restore point? Is it the full image?
Sort of. I think the problem with traditional, like when Time Machine was previously implemented, was that there could be conflicts. There could be things that happened right before or right after that weren't properly recorded. And this is an absolute, you know, bit perfect state of what your machine was in at the time of that snapshot.
And this is one of the features of ZFS and other COW file systems like APFS. So it says, are you sure you want to restore the disk depth to its snapshot state from 2 days ago? You say yes, and it takes, he says, at Mac Lovin, says it takes only a few seconds and you reboot and then you're done. So this is going to be very interesting, but as you say, it's not well documented. I mean, here I am relying
on it's hard for people to understand because we're used to traditional file systems. For example, just clone sounds great because it takes literally no time to make a copy of a file. But then if you're in your old mentality and you're like, I need to open up some space on my drive,
right,
I'm going to delete these three files, why didn't I get any space back? Well, it's because those were clones of the original file that's still there, and you got to go and track down every version of that and delete that. And it has many, many good points, but you have to fundamentally change the way you think about file systems to really get them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it's the difference between like with Time Machine faking these features that were built into ZFS and now APFS having those features actually built in. So there's a hack that works that's transparent to the user, but will break under a lot of circumstances and kind of circumvents all the reasons why this feature is a good idea to begin with. And then there's actually doing it properly, and the new file system actually does it properly. So if people aren't terribly excited about the new operating system, it's because most of the features are under the hood, as opposed to things that make daily life easier and more productive.
We talked last week about the LTE issue with the new Series 3 Apple Watch. Lo and behold, shortly after our conversation, Apple fixed it. Right?
Yep. Yeah, well, the update, they pushed out watchOS 4.0.1, I think was
the
official name.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Yeah.
And it fixed that, they claim, the cellular bug.
The captive portal.
Yeah. I actually never got bit by the bug, so I don't know where to go to see if it's fixed. But I hope somebody did. This was the issue of you would go somewhere with a open Wi-Fi access point. The watch would think it had joined it, but it hadn't. So it would turn off the LTE connectivity, and then you would therefore have zero connectivity.
If your phone had connected to it and it was a known network, it would try to connect to it, but because it had no WebKit implementation, it couldn't give you the agree to terms of service or click OK or whatever password intercept. Right. So you would just be stuck there forever.
So Apple said it was aware of the issue just before the Series 3 launched. Which is funny because they didn't tell us, but it was discovered pretty quickly, and they fixed it right away. So that's encouraging. We had some fears. Greg Farrow on Twit last week said, "Oh, I think it's gonna be harder to fix than you think." I guess not. I guess not. Good news. Apple has patented self-adjusting Apple Watch bands. Just in case you you care.
Do they have tiny motors?
They have a little motor in it. Dynamic fit adjustment for wearable electronic devices. Users could electronically adjust the tightness or looseness of their watch bands in response to biometric data from the watch. You know why this might be a good thing is because I like to wear my watch a little loose, But for better results with the heart rate monitor, you want to wear it fairly tight, right?
You want it loose in the morning and then tighter in the evening.
Yeah, right. By the way, I love the new heart rate stuff. I actually put the I turned on the heart rate complication just so I could see it. Resting rate, nice, 64 beats per minute. That's pretty good. Walking average, 88. Currently, I am a calm, cool, and collected 73 beats per minute, although I was 70.
And no anomalies? No anomalies, Leo?
That's the thing I'm waiting for. It will warn me if I haven't moved, but my heart rate goes up.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that. That should be exciting.
I think that's what this patent is about. I think it's more about health than just comfort on the band.
Yes.
They're probably going to be a bunch of sensors in the offing that can do an okay reading if depending on how the band is set, but can also say if I'm not getting a good enough reading, I will alert. I will basically if the user asks for a blood pressure reading or asks for a blood sugar reading, I will the user will know that there will be a little cam's just going to simply like a Nautilus cam is just going to simply turn a quarter inch, a quarter turn just to snug up the band and make sure those sensors are in really good contact so we can get a good reading. We've seen all the controversies about how certain fitness bands are good at heart rate monitoring and some are really off by 10% plus or minus. You don't know which one. If Apple really wants to be a health device as opposed to a fitness device, they're really going to have to nail that accuracy.
It's like the Spider-Man suit where the whole thing just zips up on you.
A couple of anniversaries. Siri is 6 years old. It was announced alongside the iPhone S October 4th, 2011. Sadly, that was also the sixth anniversary of the death of Steve Jobs. I can't believe it's been 6 years.
Yep. Mm.
This is the link I guess Carsten put in there, which I'm glad he did, from October 30th, 2011. Mona Simpson, Steve Jobs' sister, wrote that was, I think, the single best kind of summary of this. It was just beautifully written.
Remarkable.
Very, very moving. Highly recommend it.
And generous. I mean, they have every right to be private, but recognizing that a lot of people were going to be deeply affected by this. It was very, very generous of her to write something like that and make it public.
Yeah, no kidding. Even down to his final words. Beautiful, beautiful piece. So it's appropriate for us to commemorate those two anniversaries. Tim Cook. Does he speak French, talking with the president of France? The young, just turned 40.
I'd love to hear his accent in
Emmanuel
French.
Macron. Hey, Zuckerberg speaks Chinese. At least Tim could speak French. Y'all.
I think he was using those Google Buds to do like instant translation.
Those were pretty amazing.
Don't wait for the translation to answer the question.
I cannot wait to use those the next time I'm at the UN. No, actually, I'm going to Japan, as I mentioned, and Korea in the spring, and I will definitely have those.
They'll Google be your battlefish.
Yeah, because I can get along in romance languages well enough because they sound like a little bit like English, even German. But boy, Japanese baffles me. So that will be
cafe.
I don't know what you're saying. I'm sure it's good.
Coffee.
Yeah. Really? Is that you say coffee in Japanese?
No, in all the romantic
languages. In every other language. Yeah. No, yeah. Right. But that's a perfect example. I could get coffee in almost any country.
Even China, isn't it? Yum cafe. I think so.
I studied Chinese, so I can even fake Chinese, but Japanese.
Well, that's part of the smartphone revolution. Like to get around, I used to like never really trust myself using taxis in like non-English countries.
That's a good point.
But
now it's
but in Japan and China, all I needed to know was take me here, please.
Yeah.
and then simply show here is the name of the place in the actual local language, and here's the map.
Yeah. But now you might actually be able to do it.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Say it into your phone. The phone up.
I will not. I would not have the guts to try that with a French waiter, though, in France. No. give him another reason to hate you and spit in your wine.
I might be too embarrassed to use it anywhere.
You are attempting to speak French, you animal.
I buried the lead. The biggest story of the week. Google's going to buy Apple.
Yeah.
For a mere $9 billion, which would be a really good deal. This was somehow an accidental post on the Dow Jones Newswire. I think somebody was messing around. In a surprise move to everyone who is alive, Google said it's going to buy Apple for $9 billion. Google chief executive Larry Page had secret talks with the now-deceased Steve Jobs in 2010 to firm up the deal. The deal was announced when Jobs' will was read in Cupertino. The deal, which is expected to close tomorrow, gives each Google shareholder 9 shares of Apple stock worth, what is that, $1,350. Obviously, Google will move into Apple's fancy headquarters. Google employees said, yay.
That's the best part right there.
Well, that makes sense because there are 2 O's in Google. There are no O's in Apple. So they could just keep adding on as they keep going.
Yeah, accidental news, Leo. Accidental news.
That's a whole. Remember the good old days when, like, that in the press room they need to test out equipment, so they would of course write stories that of course are never going to be printed 8 million times. But now the same person on the same motivation, the same authority hits the one wrong button, and suddenly, oh, look what's happening.
Journalistic malfeasance.
You know, the funniest thing, and actually in a way, catastrophe averted. Programmatic trading doesn't know from crazy. And in fact, Apple stock price briefly went up due to programmatic trading. But imagine if, you know, they'd really glommed onto this. Anyway, it was just a test.
Or is this like those things someone like Amazon like incorrectly keys in the price of like a $3,000 pair of headphones to 30 cents and they sell 30, but they have to honor the price. Does Apple have to honor this $9 billion price if Google wants to actually take off?
Well, Google has to give them $9 billion, but Apple doesn't have to sell anymore, yeah. I think. Yeah.
All right. Anything else did I miss? Any other big stories? There's a lot of them. I don't need to talk about the Qualcomm Apple war. Yeah. It's actually a good piece, though, in Bloomberg. Over an $18 part, Apple and Qualcomm's billion-dollar war. I just like the graphic.
In hindsight, that was Bruce Sewell's last interview as head counsel for Apple.
Oh, that's right. He's moving on, isn't he? He's retiring.
Yeah, he's retiring.
Retiring. Yeah. Apple pays $2 billion a year to Qualcomm in patent fees, and it doesn't want to do that anymore, and it's withholding payments. So that one's going to go on for a while, I have a feeling. Although, yeah. Given that Qualcomm's $2 billion in the hole every year, they might be somewhat incented to resolve this.
And given that Apple still has, 21 letters left in their silicon alphabet?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
One of those could be M for modem.
Yeah. Well, you got to think Apple's working hard on replacing Qualcomm.
I mean, the W2 already does a lot more than the W1 did, and it's only a year later.
Yeah. That would be interesting. Maybe that would be in the next phone, huh? Apple would like to make... I'll tell you 2 trends you're going to. One is getting rid of all holes. No more lightning jack, no more headphone jack, just a slab
everybody,
of glass.
Everybody, Leo.
It'll all
including
be wireless.
Users. And,
including users. Yeah. Right? No more belly buttons. And the other one will be getting rid of all non-Apple parts in the iPhone. Like, it should all be Apple. Could they do that?
Where it provides significant differentiation, they want to control the technology.
But like Sony still makes the camera parts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would take them. Look how long it's taken them to become a chip fab, and they are really, really good chip designers. Now imagine how long it's going to take to be camera designers. How long it's going to take them to be screen designers? And I don't think they have enough bandwidth to do all of that. I don't think they have the interest either. Even I think they'd even prefer to strong arm Intel into making modem chips that are very, very completely up to Apple standards and Apple specifications rather than build their own, because just getting certification, just getting a modem chip that they know is going to work in every single market in which they are operating the iPhone, which includes Antarctica, I think that they're going to be judicious when they will do that, when they can find a way to improve their product by taking control of their manufacturing. Other than that, they're not interested.
They often tell manufacturers to make very specific things that they don't want. Like they are happy to engineer, but they don't want to make themselves. And when you look at things like the way the modem works or the way the screen is going to work, like Apple is using a Samsung panel for the iPhone X, but they are doing things with that OLED screen that no one has ever done before, the same way they do things with LCD screens that other companies don't do, like True Tone or the, you know, some of the other stuff that they've done with the way that, you know, 3D touch works and things like that. So they're very happy to take the commodity part from the commodity part maker and then provide the differentiation by how they actually implement the technology.
You mentioned, Andy, we're seeing more and more iPhone X in the wild. Here's some images collated by 9to5 Mac. This one I like. This shows the vertical orientation of the lens on the back and a beautiful, fully mirrored surface. on the steel gray version of the iPhone.
Everyone at Apple going, please don't let that be mine. Please don't let that be mine.
Yeah, really. Do you think there's some way that they could, I guess not. There's no identifier.
I would never risk it. I mean, I know people who deliberately don't want to carry them just in case someone snaps a photo of them out.
No, I know. And of course, for all we know, this is an Android phone modified to have the notch.
Yeah. I think the real fireable offense is going to be if they let someone actually hold it, because Apple wasn't even terribly pleased that I let David Letterman use my iPad.
Really?
So,
wow.
Wow.
All right.
which is understandable, because I had had like 2 weeks worth of experience using it at that point, and Letterman had had what, 4 or 5 hours. So.
Right. All right. Yeah. Let's take a break. Picks of the week. Getting ready, coming up in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by it's another sponsor lottery.
Boom, boom, boom.
FreshBooks. Yay. We love FreshBooks. Used FreshBooks in 2004. That's how long they've been around to do my invoices. They save me a lot. Not just a lot of time, but they actually help me get paid faster. That's one of the things you find when you start invoicing with FreshBooks. You get paid on average 11 days faster. The professional looking invoices help. But I think the secret there is that button on there on the invoice that goes to your client that says, pay Leo. And they press the button and it's easy. It's easy. But one of the things that's really changed since I started using FreshBooks all those years ago, by the way, 10 million people now use FreshBooks. So that's a big change. But the dashboard now is really a full accounting system. You don't have, now, I don't want to say that because you don't have to do anything extra. You're just sending out invoices. Recording them paid, putting your expenses in, the things you do anyway with FreshBooks. But because they know you're in, you know, your accounts receivable, your accounts paid, they know your expenses, they know your total profit, they know what's outstanding. You can get all the information you need. In fact, for the first time ever, for a lot of individuals and small businesses, you'll know whether you're making a profit at any given time. Sticky headers make it really easy in this new dashboard. You know how when you're looking at a spreadsheet and you scroll it up and the you don't know now what columns you're looking at? They've got sticky headers, so the headers shrink and remain at the top, so you know exactly what you're looking at. It really is elegant. They constantly improve the dashboard, which I really like. You could bill for time by client or by specific project. They actually have a timer built into the app or into the website, so you just start the timer. It keeps track of the time if you bill for time and hours and automatically puts it into the invoice. You could assign services to projects and designate different rates for every service. Time entries are sorted chronologically, so it's very easy for you to see, and they go right into the invoice. No extra typing on your part. It's really great, too, because if people are slow to pay, you'll know that. You'll know when they viewed your invoice. You'll know when they paid it. It can automatically send little reminders, getting increasingly vociferous if they don't pay. Employees can now log on to the FreshBooks mobile app for iOS, which makes it easy for them to take care of business wherever they are. Full description of every line item is now visible when you view an invoice on mobile. So the invoices are actually informational for you as well as your client. Of course, they've got great help, great support straight out of the FreshBooks office, but also in the app, they have a new help widget, which makes it very easy. Forbes put FreshBooks in their small giants list for 2017. No wonder. There's that great support team. They're really nice people. FreshBooks, stop laboring over your invoices and keeping track of your money and learn more and do it more easily. Get paid faster with FreshBooks. Go to FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. All you got to do is, for me, is when they ask, how did you hear about us? Just put MacBreak Weekly in that form. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for making my life a lot easier going way back. And making your life easier going forward, and for supporting MacBreak Weekly. Andy and Akko, I love your pick of the week.
the game Cuphead came out last week.
So good.
It's an amazing game. It's not available for Mac yet. It isn't available for mobile yet. But it's been in development for years and years and years. There's been no game like this. It is a cartoon, hand-drawn cartoon from 1932 from the Max Fleischer Studios, Disney Studios, again, 1931, 1932, as a game. And it's not, like you might have seen this like slapped at before with the idea of, oh, you can see that this character, this 3D character, it looks a little bit like Betty Boop, and this one looks a little bit like Popeye. It's no, this is all hand-drawn animation and then processed to look like it is 35 millimeter, 16 millimeter film, complete with scratches. But then when you play, when the game is played, it looks like you're watching a cartoon.
So
a really
fun.
It's like a 6 minute short that ends with Popeye and Bluto fighting. Now imagine just that part of the cartoon, only that's the entire game. So I can't play the game. However, I found myself watching the entire playthrough video from a YouTube user called The Rad Brad. I can't imagine what it's like to play this game, but oh my God, it's so fun to watch this game being played because the animation is so amazing. So my pick is both these gameplay videos. Again, the one I was watching was from The Rad Brad. I like the way he does these videos because he's not, hey dudes, like, oh my God, I just totally died. He's just playing the game and like commenting to explain what's happening or he's reacting. It is very, 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 very watchable. But the other reason why I'm recommending it is the soundtrack to this game is amazing. They put just as much work and creativity and beauty into the music going behind it. And I was so disappointed because I went to where you buy the game and you could only buy the soundtrack as an add-on to the game. So I'm not going to spend $20 for the game and $10 for the soundtrack. But then I found out you could buy the soundtrack separately on Bandcamp. So if you go to studiomdhr.bandcamp.com, you can buy for at least $10, but I gave them extra money. It's a three-hour soundtrack. That I'm not joking. After I bought it, I was listening to it from start to finish. I listened to this three-hour soundtrack from start to finish on Saturday while I was just puttering around the house, and really great like 30s jazz music. You can also use it for music that will, if you want to imagine you're in like a 1950s or 1960s detective movie and you are chasing someone through like the back streets of Lower Manhattan, the music works for that too.
I can't stop playing Cuphead. Of course, you have to have an Xbox or Windows machine to play it, but it is really so awesome.
Gorgeous.
When it comes to something I can play on my on a Mac or on my Android device, I'm definitely
I hope they release it. You know, it's only $20. This was
it's just incredible. I don't understand how people can actually play this game because I would be just sitting there watching the animation and dying.
It's really hard. It's really, really hard. But it's a whole heck of a lot of fun.
It's got a story
so entertaining
from start to end.
And so good looking, and the music's so good you don't mind dying. That's kind of the point of it. It's just a lot of fun. Really a lot of fun.
Gorgeous.
I'll go back to Inkwell Isle and start playing them from the very beginning for you. It's just really, boy, it is great. I don't know how they do this for so little, frankly.
Yeah, that just amazed me. I came so close to buying it just because I'm going to buy it at some point sometime. I do own a Windows machine. I suppose I could play it.
Yeah, and you know, this is you don't really need a very high-powered machine to play it, actually. Whoa. Yeah. Oh, see, that's pretty much the saga right there. So that's Cuphead.
You've lost your soul to the devil in playing dice, and it'll give your soul back if you basically be a debt collector for other souls that got sold but not tuned in. So you go all through the island. It's a whole thing, but it's just like I said, for free. Go watch these gameplay videos, and then
best way to do it, huh?
Yeah, it's just
just watch the videos or download the soundtrack. Look how many tracks there are in here. There's 56.
Yeah. And it's not—it's not repetitive. It's like—it's just everyone is. There are very few like down tempo numbers, as you might understand. But
well, you're in hell.
Yeah.
really, really nicely done. Christopher Madigan is the Toronto-based percussionist, drummer, and composer who wrote the soundtrack for Cuphead, Xbox One, Windows 10, and Steam. But you can buy the whole soundtrack on Bandcamp. Very nice. $10.
$10.
$10. All right, Mr. Rene Ritchie, what's your pick?
So mine is the return of a classic. Many, many moons ago, I believe the first Twitter native client ever made was Twitterific, and it debuted on the Mac. And now today, Twitterific triumphantly returns to the Mac. The Icon Factory, the developers behind this, people like Sean Herber and Gideon Mejia and Craig Hockenberry, they did a Kickstarter first. And if you did do the Kickstarter, you got really awesome stuff like little Ollie toys for your trouble, which are just, you know, pretty amazing. But regardless, it is on the Mac App Store as of today, and it gives you exactly what you expect in Twitterific. That is a unified timeline, very clean interface, delightful interactions, really good sounds. And it's just, a lot of my really fond memories of Twitter, you know, before all the developer nonsense, before it became a political machine, before all the bots and all the spam and all that stuff, was just using Twitterific with a bunch of tech people sitting there on my Mac. And now I have... It is absolutely new. It is completely redesigned, completely rebuilt, but it's that same familiar Twitterific experience. And if you do like this, if you do like reading Twitterific, I have two different modes. I use other apps if I'm in Twitter triage mode, where I just want to quickly see and respond to things. But on my iPad and, you know, now again on my Mac, I'm using this reader mode where I just want to go through and see everything that's happening. And Twitterific is great for that because it has that one timeline to rule them all, and you can just scroll through and catch up on everything that's happened throughout the day.
This is the reason to get it, is you don't get while you were away updates. You get just the chronological list of tweets. That's all I want.
Yes. No blue lines, no threads, no promoted tweets, no weird media handles, no BS.
Oh, I'm going to download
this. And the toolbar
right
is at the top so that it's not, you know, some people don't like it on the side because it interferes with the look of it. But really, and you can customize a lot of aspects of it. You can make it look the way you want it to look.
I need this. Now, how much is it?
It's $20, it's
worth every penny.
Yeah, totally. It's an app you use at least for people like me, you use it all day, every day. And having a good experience is easily worth, you know, the price of a few burgers to me.
Yeah. Very good recommendation. My friends, we've come to the, and Icon Factory deserves a lot of credit because they do great stuff.
Absolutely.
All around. Everything they do is well worth it. We have come
and
to Craig
the. Hockenberry needs some money to cut that hairdo that he's been sporting on Twitter lately.
Well, I haven't seen it. That's why I need a chronological.
They call it the Doc Brown look.
Oh, no. That doesn't sound good at all.
He says it makes him look even taller. I don't know if that's what he was going for.
Our show today has come to its close, but I thank you all for being here. You'll find more Andy Iannocco online at CWOB.com. That's his website. Of course, he writes for the Chicago Sun-Times. Some great technology reporting there. And he takes fabulous pictures. Follow him on Instagram, IHNATKO. Well worth it. Or his Flickr site, Andy I. Andy I. But I think you'll find all of that, including the podcasts he hosts. He's not just on this show. He does the Iannocco Almanac on 5x5 and the Material podcast at relay.fm.
And if you're in Boston or if you have access to the internet, I'm going to be on Boston NPR again this Friday at 11:30 Eastern time. So you can go to WGBH, I think it's WGBH.org if you want to stream it.
Yeah, very nice. We'll be listening for you. Thanks to Renee Ritchie. He does a lot of work at iMore.com to keep us all up to date. We had Micah Sargent on the Twit the other day. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, he's so good.
You got a great team over there at...
they're awesome, yeah. Very lucky.
What is it called? Mobile Nations?
Mobile Nations, absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, Trinity Caldwell, George Adele, Micah Sargent, Lori Gill. Everyone on iMore is top notch.
Great, great people. iMore.com is the new yellow. iMore.com is a place to go to keep up on all sorts of technology. But more importantly, it's where I go when I have a new device or new software, or iOS 11, or High Sierra, and I just want to understand it better. They do the best how-to explainers and all of that. iMore.com. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, right after iOS Today. That's 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. Please stop by. We will shift our time a little bit when our clocks fall back in about, 2 or 3 weeks. We'll let you know ahead of time. It's very confusing. Yeah, too soon. But for now, 1700 UTC. You can join us online at irc.twit.tv during the live show and comment away in the background. We love that if you do that. You can also watch live twit.tv/live or listen live on your Echo. Just say Echo. Listen to Twit Live on TuneIn. You can hear the latest Mac Break Weekly anytime. Echo. Listen to Mac Break Weekly on TuneIn. or subscribe. That's the best way to do it. Find your favorite podcast application like Overcast or Stitcher or Pocket Cast and subscribe. And that way you're going to get it every week the minute it's available. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And we'll see you next time. Now it's time to get back to break, get back to work, because now it... How many times have I said this? 600 sometimes. Now it's time to get back to work because break time is over.